Stan Hieronymus joins me this week to discuss recent research into aromatic hop oils. This is Beersmith Podcast number 152.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 152, and it's early July 2017. This week, Stan Hieronymus joins me to discuss aromatic hop oils. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're running an amazing deal right now, 20% off your subscription when you use the code BEERSMITH2017. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. And you can read my new column, which is called Ask the Experts. Take advantage of their special deal now when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2017 at beerandbrewing.com. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com. And also the new BrewVision thermometer from Blickman Engineering. This interactive wireless digital thermometer connects right to your iPhone or iPad and lets you remotely monitor and record temperatures. You can download your recipes right from the Beersmith Cloud and set updates and alerts while you brew. Get the BrewVision Bluetooth thermometer today. Another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith Software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers that lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back Stan Hieronymus. Stan is the author of the book, For the Love of Hops, as well as Brew Like a Monk. And his most recent book is called Brewing Local. Stan joins us to discuss some of the new trends in hops and hop oils. Stan, it is always a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I generally have a good time.
So you, as I understand it, you and Palmer are on the way to South Africa next week to do some presentations. I guess there's some interesting things happen in South Africa with regards to hops as well.
Yeah, we're not really going for the hops. It's not hop season there. They had their harvest. Their fall is our spring, obviously, or our spring is their fall. And that's led to a certain amount of controversy because their newer hop varieties were developed first by SAB before SAB became SAB Miller. They're proprietary, and Anheuser-Busch acquired those. The rights of those hops and about half the hop farms in South Africa when they bought SAB Miller. And some of those hops the last few years have been imported and sold to smaller American breweries. They do not grow enough of the varieties that people really want to be useful to, say, even somebody the size of Firestone Walker. Other than, you know, those one-off beers. But smaller brewers, one of those hops, they're not going to be able to get those hops this year. It's hard to say what will happen in future years.
But what's different and interesting about some of the hops they're growing there?
Well, the two are, first of all, people are excited about them because they have those exotic, fruity, new world flavors, so they work well in hop forward beers. So they're a replacement for, say, Citra or Mosaic, an alternative, or Nelson Sauvin, whatever the interest is. That's the rather small quantity. Potentially more important to American beer drinkers or American brewers is they grow their hops closer to the equator, or large quantities of hop closer to the equator than anywhere else in the world. Hops are day length dependent. Their hops, they say, these newly developed hops are day length neutral, which means you would be able to get more hops per acre, basically. This would be important to the people, say, in North Carolina. They're almost the same latitude as North Carolina. They want to grow local hops. they're at a disadvantage right now. If they were to share how they managed to breed those hops that way, that could have a larger long-term impact than the few hops they might sell to the United States.
So, I mean, you could potentially grow hops in places that we're not now, even, I don't know, like Brazil, maybe?
Brazil would be southern Brazil.
Southern Brazil,
Farther away. So people are trying to grow hops in Brazil, and people are trying to grow hops in Florida. You can do that, but your yield isn't going to be as high. Of course, there are other issues in latitude, and that has to do with disease and all those sorts of things. A lot to sort out, but people like the idea of having local hops.
But we have seen a lot of local hop growth across the Midwest and even in New England now, right?
Oh, yeah. Michigan's probably going to have more than 1,000 acres of hops under wire this year. They aren't all going to be producing at full capacity. You've got to be at 3 years old to do that, which means potentially Michigan's going to grow more hops, say, than New Zealand.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, today we wanted to focus a little bit about hop oils. Let's start with talking about what you mean by hop oils, which only really make up about, 4%, 5% of the hop cone, something like that?
Yeah, that's at the high end. Four would be at a very high end. Typically, if you'd read the literature 12 years ago, it would have said that they're going to be less than 1% to 2.5%, max of 3. Because of breeding, now we're up to 4%, although that's pretty much of an outlier. You're right, that is a rather small quantity.
And can you tell us about the different types of hop oils, for example? Because, I mean, that seems to be where all the focus is now in brewing.
Yeah, so what are referred to as essential oils, and that doesn't mean that they're essential to the hop. It means that that's the essence of the hop, the oil part. And of those, they're made up of hydrocarbons, oxygenated compounds, and a very small portion of sulfur compounds, also known as thiols. Most of that's going to be the hydrocarbons. So when you look in a hop catalog, and now beginning more often when you get a spec sheet on the hops, you'll see the largest quantities of hydrocarbons listed, which would be myrcene, caryophyllene, humulene, and farnesene. Farnesene is a very small portion. It's mostly useful to tell us genetically if the hop is a Sazer type hop. That came from Bohemia, but it's also grown, say, in Tetnang and Poland. It's going to be less than 1% of the oil. So you're talking about less than 1% of, say, 1% of the hop. That's pretty small. So that's not really one we're focused on. Most of it's going to be myrcene. The largest quantity would be myrcene, even in a hop that you don't consider myrcene heavy hop. And that's going to be green, herbaceous, resiny, all the things you think of in a heavily hop, say IPA, an American heavily hop beer. That's myrcene forward. Now, when you have fresh hop beers, that is, they're picked and not dried, then the percentage of myrcene is going to get even higher. For instance, Chinook would be, and Cascade are high myrcene beers, hops. And they might be 60% of the oils. When you have a fresh hop beer, that's going to tick more like above 80% of the essential oils.
So apparently you lose some of the oils when you dry it out, right? Is that how that works? Would there be the difference between dry and wet hops?
Well, two things are you do lose some of the oils, but also that they oxidize and they turn into other compounds. And those other compounds, so the hydrocarbons, when you brew your beer, the hydrocarbons are not very soluble, and they're not going to end up in your beer. So that myrcene quality, that's why people dry hop. But the oxygenated compounds are more likely to make their way into your beer. They're also converted in, first of all, they we'll say blend, that's not, or mesh with other compounds, because there are more than 500 compounds in hops. So we're simplifying things by talking about
it. Well, I want to dive into the oxygenated compound, but let's talk for a minute just about the hydrocarbons, though, like myrcene. You mentioned dry hopping is very important because they're not very soluble. I think they're pretty volatile too, right?
Yes. And so again, 20 years ago, advice, for instance, Gerard Lemons, who was at Yakima Chief and was super important in developing new hop varieties that American brewers were using, you know, working with the brewers and moving ahead hops like, say, Simcoe. And his advice was when you open before, if you were going to dry hop with a beer, you would open the bag a day before and let it kind of air out. So it was blowing off the myrcene because people considered myrcene bad for like the first 1,000 years that hops were used.
Interesting. So, and of course that means they boil off really quickly too, which is why dry hopping and whirlpool becomes important. But you're telling me to, you know, let's say I want to maximize the myrcene, flavor in the beer. If I'm making an American IPA or something like that, you're saying dry hopping is probably more effective because they're not very soluble.
Exactly. Dry hopping is the way you're going to get the myrcene flavor in there, or myrcene aroma, which our brain converts into flavor.
Okay. And then the other ones you mentioned, caryophyllene, and I can't remember, there's two others, I think.
Humulene, and people are really interested in the oxygenated variants on humulene, and then farnesene, which isn't real important. Those are, you're not really going to worry about those when you're dry hopping. You're not trying to preserve those flavors, but they're certainly there. Caryophyllene, that when it oxidizes, that's what gives you more of that cedar and a little bit of a spicy and even floral character that you associate with, say, a beer made with Saaz hops. A lot of Saaz may be late, so you get the Saaz flavor with it. So that's an oxygenated part of the Saaz, which is that, this is kind of a sidebar, an important thing to realize is we all perceive odor differently, and it becomes aroma in our brain. And about one third of the population, for instance, is blind to some of these oxygenated odor compounds that occur in Saaz. So they're not going to get that quote noble aroma flavor.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's switch over to, we talked about, you know, myrcene being the dominant hydrocarbon. Let's talk about some of the oxygenated compounds now. Give us a couple examples of those.
Well, the ones that are getting more attention now, linalool's been getting attention since the early 80s. It's gone through periods where people said linalool is super important. We want to breed hops that have more linalool. At the same time, in the 80s, about the time Cascade was released, which is actually 1972, the breeders were told, we don't want geranial. We don't want that geranium floral character that's in geranial. And there's something else going on in beers that when we brew with geranial, we don't want it. Geranial was bad.
Well, and certainly, if you get it high enough, it can be pretty bad, right?
But it depends what you like, quite honestly. Right now, people like it a lot. If you get the essence of which you can get these compounds, you know, smell them out of a vial, then geranial can start to be overpowering. And the best example is to compare it to geraniums. That's what it's like, is geraniums. But now, research, beginning in the mid aughts in Japan, researchers at Sapporo looked at the popularity of Citra hops. So actually, this is 2010, and they noticed in the Citra hop had a pretty similar makeup in terms of linalool and geraniol to coriander. So they began examining those side by side, and they brewed beer replacing the Citra with coriander. And they discovered that in both cases, it was creating more citronellal. Citronellal occurs at a very low level in any hop variety. It's more prominent in some than others. But this increased the level of citronellal, which gave people that impression, that more citrusy impression, a little bit. It can be lemon and limey. And as you know, you can get citronellal plants and drinks and extract. And that particular citronellal plant, if you take the leaves and you rub it on your arms, it will drive mosquitoes away. So they're going, this is a route towards creating beers with this at least the beginning of a tropical flavor.
And I guess the beers could also be used to keep mosquitoes away, right?
I find it more useful if you just spit on your arms.
Yeah. But no, seriously, this is pretty interesting. So there's a biotransformation taking place, right?
Exactly. That's the biotransformation that is taking place. You're creating new compounds. Again, this is the simplified view because there are like maybe 497 other compounds going on at the same time, and there's a synergy taking place. So I always go, hey, we don't know exactly why it's happening. So an example would be these researchers at Sapporo, and they were looking particularly at Bravo hop, which is high in linalool, high in geraniol, saying what happens if we supplement a hop like Simcoe, which we know people like, and use it as an add-on, and therefore you can use less of each one and end up with more of that bolder, fruity, tropical aroma and flavor that people want right now. And what they didn't look at the time is they said, so these American hop varieties, at the beginning, of course, they were looking at Citra, but they could look at other varieties and say Amarillo, Cascade, a few that are high in linalool, for instance. We'll run through this: Amarillo, Cascade, Centennial, Citra, Millennium, a hop people may not think about using, Mount Hood, Nugget, a very unloved hop that you can buy at a pretty good price. Those are high in linalool. Then you can take hops that are high in geraniol, say Bravo, Cascade, Centennial again, Chinook, Citra is high in both, Mosaic, Motueka, New Zealand hop. So those are high in geraniol. If you were to take those, and an important thing is those are high in absolute terms. So when we're talking about some hops, you may get a new variety, say Equinox, which was called Equinox before, that can range up to 3% oils. So if the geraniol is only 1% of that hop, it's not very much, but it's a heck of a lot more than a hop that's, say, 1% oils and only 0.5% of geraniol. So right now we're not getting the absolute amounts, we're getting percentages of percentages. But you can take those two that are high in those, and they said these are unique to American hops, and combine those, and that's when you start to get more tropical flavors. Whether it's putting two hops that you don't think of as being tropical together, or taking something that you has been creating some of that aroma, and then increasing it in an exponential way.
I wanted to point out, because I think it's important, unlike the hydrocarbons, the oxygenated compounds that we're talking about right now, they really need to be added before you ferment, right?
In order to get this
biotransformation, or no?
They you're going to get most of it. That's why a Whirlpool addition makes the most sense, or a hop stand, because you're not going to boil them up. You boil for 10 minutes, you eliminate 50% of the oxygenated compounds.
Wow.
So the 10 minute so-called flavor addition is flavor removal. There are reasons to do a 10 minute addition. Tradition, you do want to get more of the polyphenols in the beer, depending upon what you're making. But it is eliminating those compounds. So that's why at Whirlpool and then fermentation. However,
compounds are also more soluble, so they're much easier to get into the solution with a short addition, right?
Right.
A short exactly. Whirlpool.
Yeah, so that'll get them in the solution. But they will also, if you use them, if you are dry hopping with yeast present, then the biotransformations can take place then. So you have a certain popularity right now, particularly people saying with the New England IPAs, where they're adding so many hops that you just start adding them at zero and all through the fermentation process and then dry hopping with them. Their theory is that you're getting biotransformations during fermentation. And we just don't have any research to support that right now. It doesn't mean it isn't true. We just don't have the research. And also, when you hop during fermentation, active fermentation, obviously, you're also going to drive off, up, out, whatever, many of that it's very volatile. So you're going to lose those odor compounds in the headspace.
Right. I mean, the actual, when you're in active fermentation, some of the CO2 is scrubbing out exactly. some of the aroma, right?
Yeah. So it's a question, you know, there's a balance that hasn't been worked out here. But the other part, and more research at Sapporo, which was just in a paper published at the end of last year, was beginning to look at the sulfur compounds. The sulfur compounds, again, this comes from research in Japan that was supported by Asahi, was the first one to look and say, hey, we this 4-MMP, which the people in wine have known about for a long time, is important in creating tropical flavor. So then you had a focus looking at hops that, oh, we want to start grabbing these hops that are higher in 4-MMP. And to back up for a moment, when we're measuring these things, you can do the oxygenated compounds and the hydrocarbons using gas chromatography. It's much harder to measure the 4-MMP and find the 4-MMP, and that's not the only sulfur compound. 3-H is another, but that's harder to track. So there's a new method that's been suggested that will make it much easier for us to begin to look at these other sulfur compounds. In the process of doing that, what they realized is you want to be putting the two things together. Again, simplified, but taking this mix, which will be linalool, geraniol, and citronellal, which has been created during the biotransformation of the linalool and geraniol, and add in this particular case, the research, which was for MMP, which another aspect of 4-MMP is as we're going on and people are learning more about these sulfur compounds, it's been renamed 4-MSP. So you'll see it both ways in the literature, and you'll see 3-H and 3-SH. Same thing, but being renamed. But when you put those together, that's when you get that burst of tropical. It's not just the one thing.
So this this tropical fruit flavors that we're getting from some of the Pacific hops now, right, really appears to be a flavor combination?
It's a combination. It's not just the Pacific hops, though. It's certainly 4-MMP is Cascades, Centennial, Citra, Chinook, Mosaic, Simcoe, Summit, the hop everybody loves to hate, can be high in 4-MMP. It can vary from one season to another.
I wanted to clarify here too. We talked about hydrocarbons. We talked about the oxygenated compounds, linalool, geraniol, but the sulfur compounds are actually a third group, and they're really, really tiny portion of the hop oils, right?
Yeah, there'll be less than 1% of the hop oils.
But the key is bringing together the linalool, the geraniol, and these sulfur compounds then gives you these grapefruit and fruity flavors that are becoming very popular, right?
Yeah, and some of the people in the wine world have understood this, particularly for Sauvignon Blanc. So their focus on something like Sauvignon Blanc has been on the sulfur compounds. And what they begin to realize is if they're missing the oxygenated compounds, then they're not getting that fruity flavor they want. So they've sort of come at it from another direction, starting with sulfur compounds, figuring out what fits with them. We started with the oxygenating compounds are saying what supplements them. So another aspect of this is basically we're talking about hops of European origin and other. Because those down on New Zealand and Australia hops both used American varieties in their breeding background. So if we go back a million and a half years, and only I am old enough to do that, then we see the European hops leave Mongolia. Hops are about 5 million years old. They start in Mongolia. The European varieties immigrate about a million and a half years ago. 500,000 years later, hops come into North America. Now, are these differences genetic, or did they occur because different growing practices? That's not exactly clear right now, but they are different.
Interesting. And of course, a lot of this is driving us really towards hop blends too, which is interesting because, you know, it's become very popular to just use one or two hop varieties, but the blends really pull out the flavor in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah. And we can begin to, as we start to understand this better and understand the composition of individual hop varieties, then you can do the blending based upon the composition of the oils. We're not there yet. How far away it is isn't exactly clear, but this immense popularity of IPAs is certainly changing things.
And I assume that's driving a lot of the research, right?
Right. So now we can afford the research. People could go long periods of time. You go, you know, what? Why would we be spending the money for this when hardly anybody drinks these beers? Now they drink these beers, and you know, creating new varieties is not cheap, and it's going to continue to go on because we breed hops for reasons other than having the next new IPA. That would be shocking to some people, but the agronomic qualities are super important, so you can grow them. You can compare Citra and Mosaic, for instance. Citra is going to yield about 8 bales per acre, and Mosaic is going to go more like 11, 12 bales per acre, and that's a significant difference. Some of Hopsteiner's experimental hops are now more like 17 to 19 bales per acre, and they have a lot of oil and they have a lot of qualities people are interested in.
Interesting. I was going to ask, the other trend we're seeing is people are actually extracting out these essential oils, because once you isolate them and you understand how they interact with the beer, you can potentially just pull them out and add them directly. And I've even started getting literature from some of the suppliers where you can access this stuff at the homebrew level. What are your thoughts on the, you know, direct hop oil extract, where you can potentially just add the hop oils you want instead of you know, having to you know, pick a hop variety?
Well, it's you are entering an area of some philosophical discussion. First, at a practical level, when I talk to brewers who are familiar with both, they still think they can tell the difference. And that makes sense at the level. We know that there are more than 500 compounds at the hops. You know, most of those compounds are at below threshold. But quite often when you put them together, the group then pops above threshold. So there's this intricacy going on. If you think about a complicated food recipe, and that you might have put some spice in there, and at the end you can go smell the spice, go smell what you made, and you go, okay, I cannot actually smell that spice in there. But then when you eat that dish, you go, something's missing. There's a part missing, and it was that spice. It's a really complicated matrix. That's the pure practical part. Are you getting the exact same thing? No. From the philosophical standpoint, you think about when people began to use more CO2 extract. You were not getting the whole hop anymore because CO2 extract leaves a lot of things behind.
I should mention CO2 extract is the alpha extract where you're trying to get primarily the bittering compounds, right?
No, CO2 extract will actually give you essential oils as well. Founders, for instance, is using CO2 extract throughout the brewing process. Russian River's used a variety of extracts in its super hoppy beers. They're using hops as well late in the process, but they were one of the first ones to have Amarillo extracted, for instance. So you can use that. You can get the flavors. If you used only that, then it becomes the question, are people going to be able to tell the difference in the beer? Again, philosophically, at a homebrew level, if a connection with your level, this is only my view, but that extra distance between me and the raw materials, to me, that takes some of the pleasure out of it.
No, I agree. But let's separate the isomerized extracts or the CO2 extracts, which again are primarily used for bittering, from the actual extracts on hop oils, where they're actually picking out these essential oils. What are your thoughts on using some of the essential oils directly?
I'm not sure if you say I'm just going to add linalool, or I'm just going to add geraniol, then you're maybe going to leave out something else that's important. Could you use that, which obviously Sapporo is, that their research is showing, to say make something with the hops you want, and you want a little bit more pop and flavor? So you could say, oh yeah, I'm going to blend in a little bit of linalool, a little bit of geraniol at knockout, for instance. And then together they're going to create that citronellal and interact with the thiols that are already there. Then at a homebrew level, it's going to be really hard to get those small amounts going. But I guess it could definitely work. And you would still be getting all of everything else that's in the hop in some other ways. Make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It does make sense.
Sometimes people say I don't make sense.
No, you do. Your thoughts on, you mentioned using blends. Do you have some suggested blends that people might be able to try out at home that might produce some of these interesting results?
The last few years.
I know a lot of people tend to just use one or two hops, but certainly when I talk to a lot of commercial brewers, some of them are really experimenting with a lot of blends.
Oh, yeah. Right. When that first set of research or second set from Sapporo, it was a presentation at the World Brewing Congress in 2012. So the literature came out in 2013. Looking at I think I've shown this chart at HomebrewCon and several other places I've spoken. You can begin to see the varieties that are high in linalool. So it's fun or high in geraniol. So a hop like Bravo, which is, and speaking of blending, don't let me forget to talk about the substitute for Amarillo. But before we do that, if you take something that's high in linalool, that's easy to get, that people don't appreciate, and that'd be Nugget. And we're not talking about using Nugget for bitterness. We're talking about using Nugget at knockout or even in the dry hop. And then you can combine it with another hop that's high in Chinook, high in geraniol, like Chinook, again at knockout or in the dry hop, and do a beer with those two varieties for your aroma, which also augments flavor, and see what you get. You will be surprised. It's certainly and again, which you can do at a homebrew level, when after finishing the boil, let's say, and before you do the hop stand, run off a little bit of the beer, a little bit of the wort. Just let it cool down, smell it, maybe even taste it, and make some notes about what you're getting from it. And then go ahead and make this beer with these two single varieties. Obviously, the yeast is going to cause the biotransformations. And at the end, then taste that beer again and make those same notes. So whatever parameters you set up, whether it's tropical, fruity, spicy, herbal, and then compare those two, you'd be surprised by the amount of difference. So that's it's a fun thing that tells you what's going on during fermentation and the interaction with these. So Camden BMI in the UK, and this is a presentation of the World Brewing Congress last year, began looking, saying, if can we use analytical, which is essentially taking where we know what compounds are in the hops using gas chromatography and a sensory panel together to create a blend that mimics another hop. In this case, they were going for Amarillo, because particularly in the UK, it's expensive and hard to get. And what they found is blending, there's a lot of art to blending. You don't necessarily get it the first time out. And the sensory panel was at least as important as the analytical. The analytical sort of set out a some broad guidelines, but then they were obviously going to use the analytical to compare the two. So they went through many process and many blends. In the end, what they came up with was a combination where they used 5 parts cascade and 1 part lemon drop. Lemon drop is a proprietary hop owned by Hopsteiner, so it's going to cost you a little bit more. At a homebrew level, the differences in your cost are not generally as large as for at a commercial level. So you go, how much am I really saving by doing this? But it's a fun thing to do. So instead of wherever you use Amarillo, 5 parts cascade, 1 part lemon drop, and see what happens. As a follow-up to this, that same lab in England now has a substitute for Citra and a substitute for Simcoe. These are only at a testing stage right now. So they're putting these blends in the hands of commercial breweries. I know, for instance, just because I just learned this at HomebrewCon, that Avery is testing out some of these. So in the coming months, I think that Hopsteiner and BMI will begin talking about these things more, and we'll say, hey, look, this is what this gives you an alternative.
Interesting. So so perhaps we'll find some very very good alternatives for things like Citra and Mosaic and some of these other really popular hops that can be hard to get, right?
Yeah, I think the next step is we'll look and say when you're finding it, people begin to say, hey, look, I can be doing these things on my own. I can begin to understand these hops and come up with my own blends that are totally different make that unique to their own home brewery.
And potentially come up with some ideas that might also generate some of the sort of fruity tropical flavors we're looking for too, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay, Stan, well, where can people learn a little bit more about this? This is pretty interesting stuff, and it's seems to be cutting edge research at the moment.
Well, I'm pretty excited about the first time people became aware, and it was only a little bit, was the Hop and Aroma Conference symposium in Corvallis, Oregon in 2007. That was the first one. 10 years later, they're having the second one. That's coming up at the end of July. Many of the researchers from Sapporo that I've been talking about are there. There are researchers from the wine industry in France will be there talking about what they know about the interaction between oxygenated compounds and thiols. This is a graphic I actually showed at HomebrewCon, was the agenda in 2007 and the agenda in 2017. And I highlighted the presentations that discuss thiols. And in 2007, you had one. And in 2017, about half the presentations will include information about thiols. It will be a while before everything that's discussed at this conference comes out. You can bleep this out, but a small plug, and it's not like I actually make money from it. I have started a once a month newsletter called Hop Queries, which indicates in some cases that just means I'm going to ask questions we don't know the answer to yet. But I will be at the conference in Oregon. And, you know, over the next few months, I'll write bits and pieces in this newsletter about some of the things I learned there. If you go to AppalachianBeer.com and you look on the what would be the right side, see that green bar on the right side of the page,
right there.
You can subscribe to the newsletter right there. And it's easy to unsubscribe if I disappoint you.
And it's free, I assume, right?
It is free.
So very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Expensive newsletter.
It's very high tech.
So again, that's AppalachianBeer.com, AppalachianBeer.com, which of course is Stan's blog, right?
Yeah. And it's as hard to spell as Hieronymus.
Yeah, maybe you should have picked something simpler, right?
Yeah, I've spoken, when my parents were alive, I spoke to them about Smith would have been okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can always change your name though, Stan.
Yeah, no, I've had it long enough. I'm sticking Stan with Jones. It. Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention your books. I should, I'll bring them up here in a second, but your latest book, I think, is Brewing Local, right?
That would be correct.
Let's see here. There it is, Brewing Local, available on Amazon. And, of course, your other book, you get several other books, but
yeah,
Brew Like a Monk. Let's see, I'm looking at the other one here. It is For the Love of Hops. How could I forget that one?
And Brewing with Wheat.
And Brewing with Wheat, yes. So all Stan's books are on Amazon. Stan, is there anything else you wanted to add here before we close?
Just that I always appreciate you having me on, and thanks.
It's a great pleasure, Stan, and you always have new and interesting stuff to discuss, which I enjoy. I'm not an expert on these hop oils, so I always find the conversation to be fascinating. So thank you again, Stan, for coming on the show.
Okay.
And again, my guest today was Stan Hieronymus. Stan is the author of the Bible on this, which is called For the Love of Hops, as well as a number of other books. His latest one is Brewing Local, and of course, the classic Brew Like a Monk. Thanks again, Stan.
Thanks, Brad.
Well, a big thank you to Stan Hieronymus for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue is packed with great information for homebrewers and craft beer fans. Take advantage of their fantastic sale and get 20% off when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2017 at beerandbrewing.com. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new BrewVision wireless thermometer. Remotely monitor your brewing system from your iPhone or iPad, record data, set alerts, and grab recipes directly from the BeerSmith cloud. The BrewVision thermometer, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And also BeerSmith software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers that lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial from BeerSmith.com today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great Brewing Week.